What's up? How's everyone doing?
Very good.
Good? Nice. Thanks for coming to the Bedroom Music Producer Takeover. My name is Danny Deal. I'll be moderating the next hour with these fine people. I'm the president of the Chicago chapter for the Recording Academy. And instead of repeating everybody's titles, I will let everyone introduce themselves and give them a little spiel about who they are and what they do.
Hi, everyone. I am Toki Monsta, and I'm a music producer and DJ. I don't know what else to say, but I have a few accolades, but I'm not one to brag, so that's just me.
She was nominated for a Grammy.
It's nice when someone else does it.
Yeah.
And her music is amazing. And so is her Twitch channel and Instagram. No. Hi, my name is Matab Neptune, and I am the head of marketing for Global Territories at Native Instruments. Did I say that? At Native Instruments, because that's a lot of words to say. And yeah, I'm in charge of pretty much everything you see out in the world for Native Instruments and across all of the different languages all over the globe. That's me.
Hi, my name is Greg Lehrman. I'm the founder and CEO of a music software company called Output. Prior to that, I wrote music for years. I scored films and TV shows, and so, believe it or not, first South By this year. First time.
Really?
First one.
Ooh, wow.
First one. So
let this
to be here.
Texan take you around.
Yeah.
Fun fact, H-Town girl. Do we have any Houston folks out here? Yeah, there we go. H-Town, let's go.
Nice. Before we get things started, I want to get to know you a little bit. Who in this room is an artist? Okay, great. Almost everyone. Who's a bedroom music producer? Nice. Anyone in this room use Native Instruments or Output stuff? Awesome. Okay. That gives me a really good sense of who we're talking to. So to kick things off, we all know what the term bedroom producer is. I don't think we need to define that for anyone in this room. But I think one of the things that needs to be talked about is what's overlooked when we talk about the term bedroom producer? Is there a difference between how the media portrays it or how you feel you get marketed to by companies and what the reality is? Anyone?
I mean, you get marketed to by all of us, right?
Yeah. Oh, sorry. I guess, like, it's what a weird way to start. I was like, what's the question, please?
Yeah, when we're talking not about artists, but the general public, there's usually a difference in the perception of what the idea is of a bedroom producer and what the reality is. What are some of those misnomers that
I have a great example for this. My mother, for at least the first 5 years of my professional career as a musician, thought that I played in bars. I mean, at South by Southwest, I guess you are, but I mean... she didn't know the difference between being kind of like background music and being Lady Gaga, you know. For her, a bedroom producer was not a professional career. It's a non-professional approach to a professional career if that's what you wanted as a musician. And I think a lot of people see bedroom producers and hear not professional, not pro, low quality. And in a way, ironically, I feel like bedroom producing has led to an aesthetic that people really do enjoy. For example, lo-fi, hip-hop, things like that. So that's the perception people had, though I think that's shifting because so many people make music. You know, someone's like older uncle who might be in his 60s or 70s, he might download Ableton at this point. So people are becoming very well acquainted with the idea of creating on your own terms and being proud of what you make.
From a product point of view, where do you think the gap is with education?
I mean, that's a great question because it really depends on what you're trying to do, right? I think in general, when it comes to music production, it was something that was very sacred, and you didn't see a lot of people doing this. If we're talking about maybe like, you know, the 90s, I'm really gonna date myself right now here, but in the 90s, you saw 8 to 10 guys making all the hits on the radio, and they would just teach each other, and no one really knew how to use anything, and you just go up to this giant board and somehow figure it out. But I think the beauty of the bedroom producer now is that you can see education everywhere, right? Like, you've got YouTube channels galore, you've got online schools that teach you how to make music, you've got people like Toki Monsta on Twitch showing you how she produces her music. I think, you know, we can always do a better job at that. That's something I'm honestly really passionate about, is education, because it really democratizes music production and music creation all around.
Yeah, and I would add one thing, which is, you know, people at this point, if you're critical of people making music in your bedroom, you're so detached from music, right? This isn't like a new thing. We've all been making music in our bedrooms for 20 years now. And I think with all the different artists that have become so successful, they've shown that it doesn't matter what tools or technology you have. I had friends that made way better songs and tracks and had better production from a laptop and headphones than people that were renting out the village, right? I don't think it matters. Yeah, no, you can totally applaud. I mean, I think that's why we're all here, right? It's the fact that we now have access to be able to make this kind of music at home with tools that don't cost $100,000 or $200,000. We can do it with a laptop and a decent microphone and maybe, you know, a decent A to D converter. So I think the people that don't understand that, you know, they're just pretty detached from real from music creation. I think people even like, you know, Billie Eilish and Phineas, what's going on, showing the world that they made those records in the bedroom. Like, I think that the world is starting to understand it more and more.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Natab, you touched on a phrase that we hear thrown around a lot, which is the democratization of music making. That's something that's been at the forefront of conversation, particularly around bedroom producers, for the better part of 5 to 7 years. Mm-hmm. What does that actually mean, and what parts of music making have actually been democratized for artists?
Yeah, I mean, maybe just touching back on what I was talking about earlier, back in the day, all the songs that you heard on the radio were made by a very small group of people, and if you knew, you knew, and that was kind of it. It was something really hard to get into and penetrate through, but I think because of companies like ours, but also just the power of the internet and people, you know, really connecting across the globe, you get to see this peer-to-peer education and showing people, hey, you can actually make music. It doesn't have to be, again, these, like, products or being a fancy studio, you can do it at home. It sees no gender, it sees no genres, you know, it doesn't matter who you are. What was the whole Lil Nas X thing where he bought his beat for $30 on BeatStars? And look at him now, right? The power of social media and TikTok and how everyone, you know, they're being discovered on these channels. You see AR reps actually going to these social media platforms and finding new artists. This is what I think, in my opinion, is the democratization of music. Anyone who wants to make music can make music. Everyone in this room, everyone in Austin, heck, like your 70-year-old uncle can make music. There is no limit, there is no age, there is no lack of knowledge. It's out there if you want it to be, and I think that's a really beautiful thing.
Yeah, I mean, how many people here are signed to like some big record label? Right? How many people here have a beautiful recording studio, like, you know, it's made things cheaper. Mm-hmm. It's given us the ability to work with musicians that we couldn't work with previously. I mean, whether you're working with samples or you're connecting with other artists through sort of technology, right? A lot of us here are not singers. Maybe we want to work with a singer or a guitarist or something else, and now we have that on our computers at home. And it doesn't sort of take away from still wanting to work with great musicians and collaborate, but you can do that. Even distribution, right? Like, anybody can now put music up on Spotify, Apple Music. It's completely changed the game for being able to make music at home without having a degree from a music school, right? You can learn things online. You can make music sound as good as anything else in the world, and now you can release it. So this concept of democratization to me is, it's completely changed the entire game, right? It's like any of us can make music at home and be as successful as anybody else in the world. And you don't need a fortune. You don't need things that other people don't have. You know, we could all do it. And that, I don't know, it's sort of that, it gives me and everybody at our team goosebumps because we're like, okay, where is music going to go?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I just add one more thing on that, too. I think what's really interesting about music production in general is that, or music creation in general, is that it was such a specific thing to do, like, oh, I have to make a song that goes on the radio, or I need to make this hit, or I need to, you know, write, produce, and everything. But there are so many other places out in the digital world where you can be successful and you don't have to be this big rock star celebrity. Like, again, places like BeatStars and other beat-making platforms, or sorry, beat-selling platforms. You can make, I've seen people who make six digits easy in a year just selling beats online, and this is all they do. I think that is phenomenal that you can actually do that from your own bedroom. I mean, dang, should I quit my job and start making music in the wrong biz, man? Yeah. Or the wrong side of the biz? Yeah.
I mean, I guess just to add, I think that I am a product of this. Like, I'm like historically known as a bedroom producer. I am, even at this point, not signed to a major label, which is by choice. I'm completely independent, or I guess I own the label that I'm on, which is like pretty independent. All these tools are with, you know, I started making beats just with a computer. That's really all you need. And then slowly, you know, adding to that, you know, maybe getting like a MIDI controller, maybe watching some YouTube videos. I mean, I think I learned how to use Ableton solely through YouTube videos, you know. And that is this generation of musician. But before me, it was like you had to have a device, you had to be a part of something. I started off making beats thinking I needed a rapper on it until I met other producers like myself, like Flying Lotus or No Such Thing, and all these people that I grew up with, where we decided we don't need to have a rapper. Our beats were fire enough, you know? Mm-hmm. And then we created this scene. Not that instrumental hip hop music didn't exist beforehand, but so there's so much power in the producer now, much more than before. And you can see that with the rise of electronic music and just the fact that anyone knows a producer's name. Because I would say back in the day, maybe you might know Timberland or Dr. Dre, but who? What about everyone else? Mm-hmm. So you can really shine as a producer now, and you can do it from home.
I'm sure everyone on this stage, and certainly a lot of people in the audience, remember a time when the term bedroom producer wasn't celebrated, and in fact it was stigmatized. That has changed dramatically. Does anyone have any thoughts about what prompted that?
The success of people that were, it's representation in a way. It's like you going out and being like, hey, I have this Grammy-nominated album. A lot of that was made in my bedroom or on my sofa. Or, you know, you need people to be able to normalize that you don't need to have a multi-million dollar studio with a board that no one touches, by the way. Mm-hmm. you know? And just, you know, be there. I mean, even some of the producers I see working in big studios, they have their laptop. They're really just using the big speakers inside, you know? And little known fact, but so if you see me in some of these photos, that's what I'm doing. But you know, it's a really interesting way to perceive a bedroom producer when before it was kind of shamed upon. You'd have to have a flex photo in a big situation, and now if you have a cool home studio, like I have a great home studio, and I have a like I use all their products, including like a really cool desk that I got from Output and stuff, and all that is because it makes me happy, because when I go to a studio, I don't feel like creating. If I go to like a professional studio, I feel the most comfortable at home. And that's where I make the best music. We're on vacation, you know, just a little tiny MIDI controller in your computer, all these things. Inspiration comes from anywhere, and you don't feel like it has to just be there now.
Going off of what you were talking about in terms of being able to create anywhere, creating a vibe for you to create in. That feels really empowering to me. What are some other ways that you think artists are empowered now that maybe they, in ways that they were not empowered in a generation ago?
I mean, I think the most pertinent way which certain groups are getting, I'm feeling more empowered in is, well, with female producers. So female producers, female bedroom producers, whatever, and engineers, you know, I've been doing this for quite a long time without aging myself in particular, but I've been doing this for a while, and the generation out right now, there are so many talented, wonderful like women making music, especially in more technical roles like engineering and producing. And that when I was making beats in college or something, there was no one I could look up to. You know, all my inspirations were male producers, not to say that there weren't female producers, but they weren't visible, mm-hmm. you know? So, I mean, this is more specific in terms of like female bedroom producers or engineers or whatever, but I do think that it's an example where representation really matters. So if you see someone that looks like you, then it makes you feel like you can. And so if a young girl's like, Toki Monster, well, she's like, all right, like her album's like, whatever. I want them to make better music than me, and I hope they win that Grammy. And they do these amazing, wonderful things, you know, if we can see more of that. And it obviously doesn't have to be just me, but just across the board, even just the subgroup of bedroom producers, just to see someone do it big helps a lot.
Mm-hmm. Natav, Greg, how do you feel that artists are empowered now versus a generation ago?
I mean, I could stand up here and talk about our products all day, right? Like, we make a lot of products that make, I think, accessibility a lot easier, but I'm not gonna do that. You guys can go onto the website, you can do that, I don't care. I don't need to bore you with that. But I think what really blows my mind is you can literally do everything just on here. We're at a place now in 2022 that you can do it all from here. You can record vocals, you can make beats, you can master, you can upload to this beat platform or to any platform, really, and you can cash out. Oh, and do all your marketing on here as well. So really, this is what blows my mind the most, is that, again, anyone can do it. You can do it right here on your phone. What's stopping you guys? And I think that's why we're seeing such this amazing and beautiful wave of new creators entering the space, because you can do it anywhere. You can do it on the go. Creation, inspiration starts or can click from, you know, just from being in this room right now. Maybe someone's going to go doodle something. I hope you do right after here. Yeah.
Beat battle afterwards.
Yeah. I think for me, it's, you know, when I was writing and producing every day, I wanted to know how other people got their sound. I actually prototyped a website like 15 years ago called Watch Me Work. And it was going to be just basically live streams of different producers and musicians showing off how they were doing what they were doing. Because everybody, I think there's this concept that people have secrets and they don't want to share their tricks. But I actually think people are totally okay sharing it, because their creative work isn't about one trick. It's about putting their sort of heart and soul into it all. And I think what you have now is access to really seeing how people work. You have access to education, you have access to, as she was saying before, YouTube and Twitch and everything else. And that probably is the biggest change for me, is that if I was starting out now, I think I could sort of get up to speed and from a production standpoint a lot faster. So I think most people that are jumping into this have, you know, at least when we survey people and our customers, most people have played an instrument for at least a couple weeks in their lives, right? Like, they come at this with, hey, I probably know one instrument and maybe I'm not any good at it. I could just be a complete hack. But I wanna put the entire picture together, and I don't know how to do it, and I don't know how to get it to sound sort of radio ready or Spotify ready. So having that education is it's a pretty big difference for these people.
Do you think that the tools that are available now that are empowering musicians, do they have any impact in breaking down the traditional power dynamics that have existed within music for as long as it's existed?
Yeah, it's a tricky one. I mean, one of the things that we deal with is, you know, we're starting to really think about how does machine learning and AI impact a company like ours. Now, we've taken, you know, you sort of draw a line in the sand, and for us, we've said, well, hey, we're never going to be an AI music creation company. We have no interest in sort of doing that, right? But we would like AI and machine learning to help you find sounds faster, right? We want people to work quicker, right? The idea of I'm sitting there and I'm flipping, I mean, how many times have you sat there just flicking through presets? Like, I used to spend hours a day literally just going through presets. We can help you find things quicker. I think that helps. Now, the danger here is that what becomes most popular starts to get infiltrated to more and more people, mm-hmm. right? So if you think about it, Netflix or anything else, whatever is most popular kind of goes to the top of the list of recommended for you. And I think that it's really dangerous because we could get to a place where music technology companies are starting to direct the overall sound and feel. And so I think making sure companies like us really put a certain amount of randomization into that so that it's not just, hey, this is what everybody else is using. I think it should be the opposite. Nobody's using these sounds, therefore you should all check it out, right? Because from a trend standpoint, you know, music's not gonna go down a good path otherwise.
Yeah. It's funny that you mentioned that because there was a particular sample from Splice that I reported on back when I was at The Verge that made its way into a Justin Bieber song, but also was used in entirety in two other separate songs. Mm-hmm. And music recognition services had problems when you would use the app. It would sometimes direct you to one song, it would sometimes direct you to the Justin Bieber one. And that was because people hadn't done enough to the base sample to make it unique to their track.
I find that really interesting because, you know, obviously everyone loves Splice, sample packs are a thing. I don't know how you guys get them, but, you know, everyone has them in their computer. And, you know, I do wonder this, like, if there is a sample pack with a loop in it and someone likes the loop and they, you know, you try to do your due diligence, you want to cut it up and do make it your own, but some people don't. You're just like, I like this loop, I'm going to use it. But thousands and thousands of people have access to the same thing. I always wondered, like, and this kind of goes into what we're talking about. It's how we are starting to navigate music and create trends unintentionally and the legalities behind it as well. Because what I wonder is, you know, sampling, copyrights, you can't have more than a certain amount of a song before you get sued.
That's a misnomer.
Yeah, but it's something like that.
We've all heard that, right?
Yeah.
7 seconds, whatever. It's not true, but...
There are some things, right? I don't know. I mean, I should know, but I mean, I'm trying not to get caught, so...
That's why Vanilla always got in trouble for shorter than 7 seconds.
Oh, there we go. So yeah, be careful. If you can recognize it, then you're going to get caught. So, but you know, with these powerful platforms being able to influence creators like all of you, I can also see that with popularity of aesthetics of sound. So if you're on Spotify and you're like, well, damn, you know, everyone's song is mastered so loud. That's a big thing right now with engineering is the loudness war. How loud do you want your song? And obviously the louder you push it, the less fidelity you have, the less dynamics you have in your song. But if I put out a song and I think about this personally and that song ends up on a big playlist on Spotify next to all these other artists, and as it's going through when my song plays, it sounds so quiet and so small. Mm-hmm. And in context, the song doesn't sound big, it sounds small, it doesn't mean it's not a good song, but it will have that impact. And so it's really nice to hear that, you know, tech companies are trying to be conscientious of what they are doing and how they're inadvertently affecting creativity. And I think this is kind of tangential, what I just did, but I just thought it was important to mention.
Yeah.
Matab, do you have any thoughts about how the power dynamics are changing for bedroom producers?
I mean, they're paving the path for mainstream. That's what's really beautiful. I mean, we used to say this was our underground darling, right? I mean, Baby Girl nominated for a Grammy. Hello.
That's still pretty underground. I don't know.
I don't think so.
No, that's true. There's no underground. That's the thing. I remember there is no underground now. Everyone is accessible. Every single one of you guys are accessible as long as you uploaded a file to the internet and it can't be reached, you know. I think it's like indie or something. The idea of the underground doesn't exist anymore.
Yeah. Same with indie. Like, I don't see any boundaries, genres, like, I don't see obstacles. Everything is out on the internet. Everyone has a fair chance, fair game to do anything. You can go as big or as little as you want. You want to be a big pop star? You can be a big pop star. Just upload it to TikTok. Things will happen. You want to stay...
Oh, TikTok.
you want to stay behind the curtain and just make music all day and just sell your beats all day? By all means, go for it. You can make a boatload of money doing that as well. You want to do this for fun on the side, make it a side hustle, that's all you really want to do, go for it. There's just no boundaries, and that's what's really special about the bedroom music producer. I mean, like you were saying, I also, and I work on the other side, I walk into a studio and I'm like, oh, this is boring. I want to be in a room. I want to see what this artist is doing. I want to catch their vibe. Like, what does their room look like? How are they tricking out their space? That, to me, seems a lot more beautiful and inspirational than being, again, at this big-ass board that really who is playing around with nowadays. I don't think so.
Yeah. You know, it's really interesting. All the major studios that a lot of artists do like to work at are usually the ones that look a lot like someone's house.
Mm-hmm.
They're multi-million dollars, but they'll have, like, a nice, like, rug in there, plants inside, mm-hmm. and those are the most popular ones, versus you can also just make your home, just switch them around, just have that in your house, you know?
Yeah, I mean, so anecdote, and I'm seriously not here to sell anything. The reason, so Output is a music, it's really a software company. We launched a hardware business simply because we put out a blog post years ago on what is the right sort of, what is the perfect desk for a musician, right? Because everything that had been built for sort of these professional studios, mm-hmm. right? With big mixing consoles and all these racks of gear. And everybody that we knew, they didn't have any of that stuff. They were like working in a bedroom or living room. We put out this blog post, and a blog post usually gets like a 1% click-through rate. And this got between 7 and 8%. Eight times as many people were interested in this as every other article that we had. And we said, okay, you know, why don't we just try to make a handful of these things here just to see if people would be interested. And, you know, again, it's not about the desk. It's about, I think, our needs at home were very different than the needs of people in a recording studio. And a lot of those studios are really set up for tracking. You know, tracking, maybe mixing, but they're not really set up for producing. You don't need all that stuff. You don't need 50 different mics coming in, and like it just doesn't make any sense.
That's pretty cool.
It's a really good desk, by the way.
Yeah.
I didn't get it. I actually paid full price for the desk. It's a really good desk.
It's a beautiful desk. It's a beautiful piece of furniture. Okay, and
that was an honest plug right there.
Sweet.
I didn't get a discount on it or anything. I paid for it, so you guys know. It was great.
You know, it's funny. We at Native Instruments, so we have hardware and software, and you know, we gift artists things from time to time. And it's really funny, I've noticed over the last few years that, you know, we make keyboards at every size, right? We have 25, 32, 69, no, 49, 61, 88, I can go on and on, right? And, you know, with some artists, we're like, hey, we want to give you an 88 or we want to give you a 61. And they're like, no, actually, can you please give me a 32 or a 49? I don't have room for that. Or I'm constantly on the road and I need something to fit into my backpack. And it's funny, we really just sit on a lot of these larger pieces of equipment. And it's something that we're actively also looking into with other pieces and things that we're working on and innovating on. Is like, okay, what is the portability of all of this stuff? Mm-hmm. Because our things don't sit on a traditional desk anymore. I mean, some do on a beautiful piece of furniture like the Output desk, and it's got a nice little place for it. But really, it's about the portability and it being on the go now. We're really, really actively working on that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. With plugins and software becoming more accessible, cheaper, people at home using complicated things to make music, have you noticed any difference in how your products are designed or features that you implement for the market that exists today?
Oh, absolutely. Mm-hmm. I mean, from software to hardware, everything across the board, you know, I don't know. Can I see a raise of hands? How many people use Native Instruments? Oh, wow. Okay. What about, let's get into a little niche, Kontakt? Okay, any synth bases like Mass Effect, Reactor? How many of you still love Mass Effect and Reactor? amazing. Yeah, so I mean, these are some of the products that we really listen to the feedback of our customers. And it takes a long time, so I apologize for those who wait on these updates and new versions. Mass Effect took forever, but we really want to make them special for everyone and make sure that we're figuring out the ways to use our products, because it's actually not one way, shape, or form. I've learned from talking to artists going out in the field, and they're like, oh, actually, I just do this, this, and this, and it blows my, oh my gosh, it's so much faster, it's such an easier workflow. I should go let the guys know, you know, let's figure out how to work that out in the tech side of it. So we're constantly listening to feedback of all of our customers. That you guys are the most important thing. Please tell us. You know, we've got forums, social media. We're constantly in the comment section. We've got teams actually in the comment sections raking in all of this information so we can see what can we do to make things better. I think what's, again, back to the bedroom producer, trying to make things a lot easier and more accessible again. When I came onto Native Instruments about 7-8 years ago, I mean, I'm just a music fan, and I generally am like the nerd who likes to understand how things work, especially with music creation. I mean, I played a little bit of piano, DJed a little bit, not going to try to take any real credit for that. But when I started at Native, I was kind of blown away by how overly complicated some things could be. And again, it wasn't for people who were just starting to get into music creation and production. It was for people who have already spent maybe, you know, a couple years, maybe know a couple instruments or things like that. So we're really trying to lower that barrier of entry. And we're also talking about things like subscription now as well. We've got subscription-based products, and I think that's also really important because we like kind of like gear acquisition, right? I'm sure there's maybe, again, raise of hands, how many of you guys have more than 10 presets on your computer? More than 2 pieces of hardware? Right. We all love to collect things, but you run out of space, and that's also the problem, especially if you're on the go or if you're in your bedroom or the hard drive on your computer or, again, your phone. You don't have a lot of space. So how can we make things easier and more accessible, and maybe being cloud-based is part of that answer? Mm-hmm. Yeah.
This is also slightly a tangent, but when you're mentioning massive, this is what is interesting about music is it just comes from anywhere, right? Do you guys remember like 2010 era like British dubstep? All of that came from using massive.
Yeah, you're right. Yeah,
one synth created an entire genre of music. Yeah. I mean, you know, or like a version of that, you know. And I just always thought that was so fascinating.
Yeah.
That you can have the other thing is you create something not really necessarily listening to what people want, but that gave someone, a group of people something to really work with.
Right.
And so I don't know. I just thought that was fascinating thing to touch back on.
Oh,
yeah.
Greg, I'm sure you have some thoughts. A lot of the output plugins have a lot under the hood, but the UX is very simple when you open it.
Yeah, I mean, that's always been a big part of our philosophy is that, you know, there's this thinking that you've got professionals and then sort of hobbyists or newbies. And it's not. It's you have people that like to get their hands dirty and they like to tweak, and there are people that just want to move quickly and get an idea out. Our philosophy has always been that our products have to have the depth under the hood, because that's what allows us to make good presets, that's what allows, you know, you guys to make great sounds. But 90% of people don't want that. They just want to be able to open up a preset, move a couple faders, change it a bit, feel like they made it their own and move on. And so it's really been a UX challenge. It's how do you provide sort of the simplest navigation early on, but really give the ability to dive in deep. Now, you know, your question, I think it's an interesting one, because one of the biggest things that we've done over the last few years is really go cloud-based on our products. Now, this isn't about subscription or how you pay. It's about the fact that we can send you all the new things without you having to leave your home, right? I mean, it used to be the kind of scenario where you have to go constantly buy different plugins, or even before that, you go to music stores and buy things on CD or DVD. It was annoying. And I think when we've gotten used to technology where I could take my phone and all of a sudden have somebody come over, pick me up, take me wherever I want to go, the fact that I can't do that kind of thing with plugins was crazy. And where a lot of other companies have gone is they try to understand what works before they make it permanent, right? Again, going back to the plugin world, you make something, it'd be the best you can make it, you put it out to the world and you say, I'm done. And sometimes you had winners and sometimes you had complete, you know, failures. And now what we do is we put together the best thing we possibly can, we get it out there, and we actually start to get feedback from people, like you were saying. We try to understand what's working, what's not, what's confusing, what's not. What sounds do people like, what do they not like, and how do we continue to make it better and better before that, you know, a wide release. So I think that it's funny that you say, you know, like the word cloud seems like it's 15 years old, but for the world of music plugins, it's still relatively new. And it's because it was harder to do, right? It's easy to make a standalone application cloud-based. It's hard to make a plugin cloud-based. They weren't really built for that. You kind of have to hack it. So I think that as we get into this, what you're going to start to see is all companies, all plugins are going to be cloud connected, right? And all the new content is just going to be starting, it's just going to show up. And you're going to get to a point where your plugins are going to be updated without you even saying, hey, you know, just like you go to your apps on your phone and they're just changing on a daily basis. That's going to happen with your plugins too. And I think that the rule is, and we have a very strict rule, don't mess with somebody's music. Mm-hmm. You can change a plugin, but if they play back something they wrote and you change any part of their sound, then you're an asshole. So that's what we try to do. Like, you cannot change that. And that's like the most important thing for us.
I want to make sure that we leave time for questions from the audience. But as a last thought from everyone up here, how do you think that these tools that are available for bedroom producers now or are going to shape the next generation of musicians?
It's so funny when you guys were talking, there are just so many different notes you were hitting that really resonated with me as basically the consumer, but also the creator, right? And we're moving into the future, and honestly, I just want less stuff. And we have so much stuff. And what can we do to efficiently be as creative as possible? And I think that's what I'm seeing from you guys. And you know, I have many, many, many MIDI controllers. Do I need them all? No. And then you know what that does? It creates a lot of trash. And, you know, they expire and they get old and all these things. So, you know, what I need is, like, a good one or whatever. I mean, I collect gear. I have too much shit. I must be honest, you know. But being conscious for the next generation, I think also the current generation and the ones upcoming, everyone's thinking about much more than just music. You know, it's our impact and... also how we streamline everything, because we live in a very streamlined life right now. And I just hope that as we exist further, that we have these tools at hand that these companies are making that make us feel more creative and more involved. Because when you're touching on UI, for example, a lot of these plugins that existed many years ago were really confusing. They were mostly modeled after analog gear. If you don't know how to move a dial, if you don't understand compression, how are you going to use them? When you have these new plugins with the UI that people are starting to make, like I like FabFilter, I don't know if that offends anyone, but then, you know, they make great plugins. They're very easy to use. You know, we have like dynamic EQs and all this stuff, and now people understand how to use it, but half of it is knowledge and half of it is how it's being redesigned for us. And I really like that. And it kind of goes back to the democratization of music, is everyone feels like, oh, finally, I can do this. And not like, I opened Reason once when I was in 10th grade, and I was like, I shut that thing straight down. I was like, this is not going to happen. Not today, you know? And it's just really cool to see now that everyone feels like they're not scared to try. Mm-hmm. So.
Yeah, I got to add to this one. I think that don't hold me to it, but 10 to 15 years from now, none of us are using plugins and DAWs. Like, I think that the world is going to change way beyond this. I think that, you know, what she was saying earlier, these plugins and the way that we make music is based on old hardware. It's trying to replicate... you know, panning something to the left by taking a fader and using my mouse and pushing it up, right, or down makes zero sense. When you see some of the things that are happening in the world of AR and VR, where you can actually take your, you can take your mix and just start to move it where they want it to be, and you can pick your room, and you can, I mean, imagine a time where you have a virtual studio that's right here over your hands and your eyes, and you can sit on a plane and make a track that can, you know, be posted that day. I mean, I really do think, and we're not there yet. I mean, we still haven't even, I don't think anybody's really cracked music creation on mobile, which is crazy to me, right? I mean, and I think that the answer is that the real estate size, like the amount of space, you know, visual space that you have here makes it hard to make music. But I think once we sort of blow that out and we're in more of an AR, VR kind of space, I think it's gonna make music creation way, not only more accessible, but more fun and more musical, because nobody wants to sit in front of a computer all day staring at a mouse or little buttons and knobs. Like, you got in this because you actually like making music and you want it to be tactile and you want to play and you want to have fun, right? And that's the point of it, is actually enjoying what you do. So I think that there's going to be a trend away from plugins and DAWs in a traditional sense, and that companies that end up jumping on board are going to lead the charge, and companies that try to, you know, just continue where it is, and again, this isn't in a couple years from now, but they're going to become sort of blockbusters of our industry.
Wow, blockbuster, huh?
Going blockbuster.
Bring it back.
Bring it back.
I mean, I don't know. Have you ever used iMachine on your phone? It's up there.
Yeah, it's up there.
It's not bad. I have fun with it. I think what's really cool that we're seeing right now and that I really foresee happening even more, and I hope you all go and do this, is collaborating a lot more. I think that the thing with bedroom producer is it can be very isolating. It's you in your room, especially during this COVID era where, you know, we were really, really isolated and there wasn't really a way to collaborate and kind of vibe and just really get that vibe off of each other. And I think because of, again, the internet and all of these other platforms that you see where people can collaborate online, there's a lot more platforms where you can upload your music and get feedback from your peers and not see internet trolls, which is mind-blowing, especially in this, in this space, I don't see it as much necessarily in other spaces. I mean, everyone in this room, you guys are a tribe, like you found your people. These are your people. Everyone out here in Austin right now, like these are your people. And it's really cool to see that. So go out and find those people and collaborate. I want to see so much more of this. Like go out on Twitch and like wild out and just see what happens, man. Like it's really cool to see that. And I want to see, you know, or I hope to see, which we're kind of starting to, is music creation in the forefront and being a part of pop culture. It's already happening right now. You see it like in documentaries, you see it on places like Apple TV, and it's really beautiful to see that that's happening in the forefront. It's no longer in the background or being something super niche. So I think that's really cool that you are all a part of that movement and it's going to continue to move in that direction.
Thank you. If anyone in the audience has any questions, we do have a mic in the center.
This has been terrific. I use Studio One from PreSonus. I use the subscription model, the pro version. I'm going to buy another computer soon. What specs, what sound card would you recommend?
Whatever the newest thing is, you know. I mean, honestly, I would just say always, you know, get a powerful computer.
Yeah.
So the processor or a lot of RAM, 12 gig of RAM?
All the things.
A lot of RAM, yeah. Higher processor. I mean, yeah. Because honestly, you know, it's if you're a musician, it's really hard to upgrade your computer. Right? Yeah. You're losing backwards compatibility to most of your music on the previous one. So you want to, when you get that new computer, you want that to be your baby for as long as possible. So go all in, spend the money, get a better computer. Audio interfaces these days, I mean, there's a lot out there that are quite good. So, yeah.
Quick question. You said radio ready versus Spotify ready. Are those two different things?
No, I'm just dating myself.
Hi. I'm going to have to ask you guys to help me because I don't know how to word what I'm trying to say, but I know what's in my head. So we're democratizing this barrier of entry into music production so that anyone can do it. You can do it as a side hustle. You can do it as your full-time job. You can do it as something you just do for fun. And I think that that's great. But part of the culture we've created around that is now all of a sudden everybody is a music producer. Well, I changed the light switch in my house. I'm not an electrician. So as someone who's trying to be a professional, you know, I tell people, hey, I'm a music producer. Oh, that's cool. My friend from high school makes beats. Like, no, I work with artists. We do albums, we do this sort of thing. And how, as companies, do you kind of walk that line or decide who you're making your products for?
You got to just be better than them.
Yeah.
No, I mean, I'm saying that sort of facetiously, but the reality is I think the more musicians in the world, the better the world we're living in.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And so I take the side of... Let's get everybody to make music and get to that goosebump moment because they become kinder, nicer, more creative people. And that's a world that I'd like to live in. There is a difference between somebody that's been doing this for a long time and somebody that, you know, jumps in a garage band for 20 minutes and tries to make something. There's a really big difference in production. And I don't think technology is going to to make them sound like you, per se, right? And I think one of the biggest things that you can do is always bring live musicians into your recordings. That's the thing, right? It's one thing to just purely work with samples, and that's great, but that is something that will distinguish it. As you bring a musician or two in, even if 90% of the track is, you know, sample-based, it can distinguish it. So I think you have to just show the world that your art is passionate and it's good and it's something that you've worked on for years. And I do think the best, you know, what I hear sort of rising to the top usually is really good.
You know, I can actually comment on this too. I agree that, I mean, like post SoundCloud era, there are like everyone, their uncle, their aunt, their little sister, their cousin, everyone makes beats. You can give your phone to your like 1-year-old niece and she will make a beat, you know? But that doesn't take away being good at it. You know, it's like everyone can draw, but not everyone draws well. I can try singing karaoke, but you don't want me to sing at your wedding, you know? So, you know, there is the separation, and you have to realize not everyone who makes music wants to be like a professional musician. Sometimes it's just a nice hobby, you know? And that doesn't take away from the legitimacy of you being a professional producer. You know, you're producing for artists, and the one thing I can say that is important, and it's something I share really often, is to be yourself and not to try to be like other people. If you make a beat or if you make music and it sounds like something else that's already out there, you have no chance. Someone already made it. Someone already sounds like, you know, Billie Eilish or Skrillex or I don't know, whatever random example, but you want to give. It's you being okay with being the weird one for a while and then you being the one to change the course of creativity. So, you know, if you're worried about everyone making music, just be yourself and you'll stand out. Yeah. If you have a good voice to share with everyone, you know.
Well, I love that. Be weird.
Yeah, be
truly.
Come on, where are we? Yeah, I was gonna say.
Because there's so much music out there. If you sound like everybody else, it's not going anywhere.
Mm-hmm. All right. Thank you, guys.
Thanks.
Hi there, guys. First, I just want to thank y'all for putting on what's been the most interesting panel for me. My name is Adrian Womack. I go by Womack. I work at a music production company called Racket Club. We make music for mostly the commercial spaces, but also short films, documentaries, things like that. We work with a lot of independent writers. And my favorite thing about my job is that we have a bunch of people who are essentially bedroom producers, and they, you know, are the epitome of the benefits of the access that we have to the tools to create, the access to educating ourselves on how to create better. But one of the things I think is still sort of stopgapping for creators, and what I'm sure a lot of the people here are interested in, is how can you monetize off of the things that you make? And I know that my work is one avenue, but what advice do you suggest to other artists in terms of different ways of actually monetizing your work?
Man, it's hard to make money as a musician, isn't it? I don't know. It's hard to say because, I mean, you can choose. I mean, you mentioned, like, platforms that allow you to sell your music. I mean, first and foremost, if you want to make money doing music, you better have really good music, you know. Or at least music that at least one person wants to hear and pay money for, really, you know. And for me, a vast majority of my income comes from touring. And that's a lot of musicians nowadays. You don't have to be that. Like, it's unfortunate because lots of musicians don't necessarily want to be out there. They don't want to DJ. They don't want to be in a band. They don't want to perform. They just want to make beats. For me, it's kind of the way the music industry kind of changed, where you don't make a lot of money off your music nowadays as a performing artist. You know, there's streams. And we all know Spotify is a little tiny, not even a cent, right, per stream. And that may not change. Hopefully, you know, someone will work around it. But in terms of just, like, actually monetizing what you do and still loving it, too, because, you know, you could try to monetize your music and then end up resenting making music, and you don't want that either. I guess, yeah, for me, I found a way to start. People like my music enough for them to want to see me perform it, and then that ended up working out for me. But, you know, it's hard, and I don't, like, that one's really hard to navigate in some ways, but
I mean, I think it's also about marketing yourself as well. you can't just assume, okay, I just spent a whole bunch of time making this one thing, let me just push one button and put it in this one place and just wait for the money to roll in. It's not going to happen. It could, potentially, if you go on some of these platforms, maybe. But you really need to market yourself and also think a little bit, find your niche, a little bit out, think outside of the box. I mean, you just mentioned there's all these other places where you do scoring and things like that. I mean, that's music creation. It doesn't always have to be making a really dope beat. Why don't you score, find something online and rescore it and put it on a YouTube channel and, push things like that, put it up on other social media channels. I think there's lots of great ways that you can really put yourself out there and find ways to monetize. To be perfectly honest, at Native, we look for people online that are doing things, again, on all these social media platforms. Hey, that's really cool, that one thing that you did. Would you like to come make some sounds for us or some presets for us? There's lots of places even like that that maybe creators aren't even thinking about. There's, just put yourself out there. You never know who's going to be reaching out.
Mm-hmm. That's really true.
I get this question a lot, right? All right, you helped us make music. Now what, right? I think my first nugget of advice is you need to understand all the different ways out there to make money through music, right? And I think that most people don't know, 95% of it, right? So I've been in the world of music creation professionally for 19 years. Everybody that I know that was serious about it, that was decent at it, and that was hardworking, they've all made a living for the most part. They're not all doing unbelievably well, right? But if you have, you have to have the grit and the perseverance to really stick it out. There's tons of rejection, you have to be okay with that. But you also have to say, all right, I get it. Like, I'm going for this bigger thing, and I have to get good at marketing and all these things. But there's probably also ways that I could supplement that income on a day-to-day basis. Now, my story was, I was working in the world of film and TV, right? And so kind of what you do is you start apprenticing or working for other composers. And so I did that for a number of years. And they would give me opportunities to work on some of their projects. I started doing sound design for software. So I got some money actually doing the original sound bank for Reason.
I also resented. I also resented the Reason disc, but that's okay.
So like I was making a couple bucks per preset that I was creating for them. I was creating music every single day, and though it wasn't always for specific projects, I built a catalog of my own content, so I got deep into the world of music licensing. So I would take that, and I would give it out to sync shops or major publishers, really try to build up sort of the royalty world. I don't think it matters if you're trying to go into film or TV, if you're trying to make more sort of traditional song-based music. If it's good, you could find homes and they can license it, and you can also maintain the ownership of it. So I find that in the world of licensing and publishing, there's a couple different paths, but one path is they take that music and they own it, now it's theirs. There's also a path where they just license it. So I think you have to go out and really understand, like, what are all the different places that I can make music? Companies like us, companies like Native, like, we're hiring sound designers constantly, but you got to figure it, just find that out.
Awesome. Thank you, guys.
We do only have about 7 minutes left, so if we could speed round the next few answers. Yeah. Okay, great.
Hi, my name is James. I'm really interested in the idea of, in 10, 15 years, VR producers, but how do you see live musicians in the next 10, 15 years, and how are they going to innovate to keep, remain in the process? Does that make sense?
This is interesting because I've worked with this company called Wave XR. They're actually based in Austin now. They used to be called Wave VR, and I actually collaborated with them, and we did our first VR performance, and it was an album release party, and it was super cool. It was really interesting and very forward-thinking, but they have actually grown. They have multiple investors. From when I knew them, they were working out of a small office. Now they have many, many employees. They're based here. They're doing large scale, like Justin Bieber, et cetera. Their growth is indicative of where that world is going. And I think existing in a virtual space, especially with the metaverse, NFTs, all of that, we're going to see it moving more towards that kind of existence, especially with performances too. And, there are always pros and cons, but that's where I kind of see it,
Thank you.
Hey, thank you so much. Super informative. As I'm a producer out of Dallas, and I'm always looking for resources and places just to continue learning and growing. So do y'all have any, I guess, recommendations for either groups or maybe associations of women in music and female music producers?
Yes, ooh, there's quite a few places.
Thank you.
I'm a member of a group called She Said So, and that's a great place for women and other just underrepresented groups to be a part of. I think it's a really, really fantastic space. I mean, there's Women in Music, or no, there's She Is Music.
She Is Music,
thank you.
Yeah.
I think you could literally just pop it in Google, and now there's just so many. If you're also looking for education, I think there's a handful of female and also underrepresented organizations that help just within the educational space of music. If you want, I just have to look them up on my phone.
No, that's great. There's a lot of noise out there, so I'd love to see like y'all's like favorites and
oh,
all.
Sure,
no,
yeah.
I really appreciate it. I'm gonna come talk to you after. Thank you.
Yeah, for sure.
Hello, I'm Edgar. So in 2018, I founded a company called Embodme. We make an expressive and versatile MIDI controller. And my concern is about expressivity in music, in computer music, because, you know, we have computers, we have endless possibilities in terms of software, sounds, but the controllers are still very much on and off triggers and sliders, which is not very expressive. So I wanted to know, yeah, if you're going mobile, if you're going in a paradigm where you only have computers and very limited gear, what's the room for expressivity and the feel of playing music with digital equipment?
The haptic feedback is important, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's nice
feedback.
To have mm-hmm. that feeling every time you get a new MacBook and the keys get shorter and shorter, you're like, what's going on?
Mm-hmm.
But you
yeah,
do get
yeah.
used to it, weirdly. And then you go back to another one, you're like, this is...
Yeah,
my fingers are working a little too hard. I don't know. I mean, I'm noticing one of my favorite MIDI controllers I travel with is the Keith McMillan one. It's completely flat.
Uh-huh.
You can bang it against the wall. The thing will not break. I think it has an accelerometer in the inside, so you can also use it for so many different things. I just think that you can still have hardware while it being still efficient. So not everything has to be in a digital space. You don't have to make music on an iPad for the rest of your life.
Mm-hmm.
It's just how things might change to be more ergonomic and lend itself to creativity.
Mm-hmm.
That's just my opinion,
yeah.
but
yeah.
they
I
probably
mean, also
know.
Also, what you're talking about is MPE, which people have been really slow
yeah.
to pick up on.
Mm-hmm.
Rolly
yeah.
has not really found their footing in the market with it.
Yeah.
And there are a couple of rings that allow for expressivity while you're working,
mm-hmm.
Which are great for guitar players, especially for piano players, but also they've had problems with adaptation.
Mm-hmm.
It's really cool technology.
Yeah.
People have not had the opportunity to try anything that's MPE enabled. I highly mm-hmm. suggest you do it.
Ableton has enabled MPE, and I think like Fruity Loops. There's a few DAWs that have
mm-hmm.
it, but it's like
mm-hmm.
you need a device
yeah.
to
yeah need a device.
Yeah. And same with some of our hardware. I mean, we have haptic on some of our hardware as well, but again, that's like a giant piece of hardware. And same with keyboard. Like we're weighted, but you know that's about as far as that goes too.
All right. Thank you so much.
Mm-hmm.
Hey, y'all. I'm a software engineer full-time and just a hobbyist musician on the side. Something we touched on a bit was a lot of the buzzwordy emerging technologies that are starting to play a role in music tech. I'm curious if we could discuss some that aren't very buzzwordy or if you know of any technologies in their infancy that people should keep an eye on that no one's really talking about, and you're like surprised no one's talking about.
Oh man.
Yeah, I mean,
I'm sure you get approached a lot.
Does everyone want to sign an NDA right now?
Yeah, I was going to say.
I'm
trying to think of what I could talk about publicly. I mean, you know, continuous delivery is, I think, a big one, right? And that's not too sexy, but it's the idea that what's the use in making all these updates to products if people aren't updating them? Right? Can we force it? Can we get it out there? And can we do it in a way where it doesn't actually, again, like I said before, it doesn't actually, you know, impact the sound of the music? That's a big one, which really hasn't been cracked in plugins. You know, and again, like from a software standpoint, plugins are very different than a standalone application. You know, Arcade was really one of the first.
it's probably the first cloud-connected, true sort of music creation tool, right? I mean, you had sort of cloud-based browsers. And where that gets challenging is that you have to combine both C++ and sort of a React side within one plugin, right? And so you have this communication issue of the different layers. I think more and more companies are going to start going down that path.
Cool.
Sorry, I don't know if that's disappointing. You want more sort of...
I guess if I could follow up on it a little bit.
We are at time. I'm sorry.
Okay,
exactly.
Cool. No
worries. Yeah. But thank you, everyone, for coming.
Yeah, thank you.
Thank you.